The City Quick Connect podcast is brought to you by the Municipal Association of South Carolina.
Hey everyone, this is Russell Cox, editor of the Municipal Association of South Carolina's Uptown publication, and today I am joined by Blake Sanders. Blake is the mayor of the town of West Pelzer. Mayor, how are you today?
I am doing wonderful. Thanks for having me.
We are glad to have you. I saw your presentation during the annual meeting, and it was definitely a lively presentation. I enjoyed it.
Great. Thanks for attending. It's always fun to get to explain that the mayor's job is to be the chief storyteller. So if I don't tell the story, then you'll make up your own about West Pelzer.
Gosh, isn't that the truth? So we are here today to talk about the achievement award that the town of West Pelzer won from the Municipal Association for its, and for some reason this is always a difficult thing for me to say, Rural Renewal Master Plan. Rural Renewal Master Plan. Which is aimed at reinvigorating the downtown Frankville business district and transforming it into a vibrant commercial space that can best serve the town's growing population. Before we get started, can you tell our listeners about why we are talking about this name, Frankville, when we're talking about West Pelzer? Because this award was the first time that I had heard the term Frankville.
Absolutely. So I always love to tell this story. I get to tell it four times a year at the elementary school to the different grade levels during their social studies classes. And it always brings a little bit of laughter from the children, but then also the adults who have never heard the story as well. And so 1893, Captain Smythe and Francis Pelzer started Pelzer Manufacturing. They built the first, they built one of the first dams along the Saluda River. The first GE turbine was brought in that was actually signed by Thomas Edison. And Pelzer Manufacturing was the first organization to put electricity into lines and to move it overhead between mills. And so Pelzer, as an unincorporated area, was this bustling place. I called it the Silicon Valley of the South. Back in the day, it's where everyone came from around the country to see how this operation was happening. But Captain Smythe, the Pelzer Manufacturing Organization and Captain Smythe, they paid in mill coins, you stayed in mill housing, you shopped in mill stores, they told you when you could take vacations. And they didn't allow three things. And those three things were gambling, dogs, and alcohol. And so in 1913, a guy by the name of John Franks, who was a surveyor for Pelzer Manufacturing, he started surveying out new roads and new property lines on what would be the west side of the railroad tracks that served that served Pelzer. And so Christmas Eve 1913, I like to say, as the snow fell, the Secretary of State traveled from Columbia, and they and the aldermen incorporated Frankville. And so for 5 years, it was called Frankville. And September the 13th, 1918, the name was changed by a majority vote to West Pelzer. And we have been West Pelzer ever since.
So for the purposes of for the plan, it's called the Frankville Business District for the history.
Absolutely. And I'll talk a little bit more about the planning process and kind of how we arrived at that. But we wanted to make sure that we respected and reflected upon our history and created a new vibe. You know, we're fortunate to be able to travel across the state and see the other 270 municipalities. And those that are successful have created that sense of place either through the architecture or the streetscapes or the plazas or the parks. And a lot of them incorporate, those unique and cool names that are kind of catchy that we get to then brand as the Frankville Business District, because it is, probably 40,000 square feet. So we're talking, the size of the electronics and sports department in a Walmart. That's how big our downtown is. So we've got to give it this cool name to get people attracted to it.
And it starts a conversation just as we have here. It starts a conversation.
Absolutely.
So this master plan, obviously there was a perceived need and a purpose to achieve here. So could you walk us through the circumstances that led the town to do this?
Absolutely. So I like to start each conversation kind of introducing myself. And I always start every presentation with, my name's Blake Sanders, and I'm a husband, father, landscape architect, planner, mayor, and professor. And I am a husband and father first, because people matter more than any place that we can create. Mm-hmm. But one of the great things about being a mayor and a landscape architect is that I'm always thinking about planning. What's next? What's the capital project? How do we entice or encourage the next group of individuals to invest? And so when I took over January the 1st of 2016, that was one of the first things I asked for from our town administrator was, give me all of the plans from our previous 10 years, our strategic plan, our comp plan, our master plans, our park plans, and let's lay them out and start evaluating them. And I was brought a blank folder, which was discouraging, but it started the conversation that I could then have with planning commission, with residents about this is why we actually plan. We're not going to plan for a $1 billion investment of something 50 years from now. Let's plan for what we want today. And so while I didn't plan for a better name for it, because it is so difficult to say, the Rural Renewal Master Plan was really a 5 years of planning. And the first step in that was starting to evaluate our existing conditions. And when you sit down with members of the public and those that are investors in the area or the region, you start to ask questions like, why do we have zero businesses in town? And you ask those pointed questions, you get some very pointed responses back. And so the planning process was very intentional as a landscape architect and as a mayor, but it was intentional knowing that we needed to grow. And mm-hmm. so very similar to churches, if you're not growing, you're dying. Very similar to your bank account. If your bank account's not growing, it is depleting. And we were depleting at a rate much faster than we were reimbursing ourselves, if you will.
Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of very intentional public input that went into this plan development, as I understand.
There was. It was very strategic in who we invited to focus group meetings, but then also the public aspect of it. And so first with the focus groups, we invited business owners in the Tri-City area. And so when I say Tri-City, I'm talking about Pelzer, West Pelzer, and Williamston. We invited business owners from those. We had focus groups of elected and appointed officials. We had focus groups that were economic development related from the chamber and Anderson County, and really just kind of sitting everyone around and talking about the things that were important to folks that lived in West Pelzer, but then also kind of what they wanted to be when they grew up. And we found out really fast from those focus groups that the faith-based community, the senior community, having elementary school children weigh in, they all were saying the same thing, that they wanted a vibrant place, that they felt safe, that they felt comfortable, that offered some of the same amenities that they could have in, you know, a Greenville or an Anderson or a Spartanburg, but they could have mm-hmm. it close to home. The public side of it was also very intentional in that we were kind of tired of City Hall being a place where it was negative or had a negative connotation, because in City Halls, what you do is you come to pay a fine, or you come mm-hmm. to pay a utility bill, or you're coming to a council meeting to complain. And so we didn't want to have anything inside of City Hall. And so over the course of 5 years, through the different master plans that we had completed to reach kind of the culmination of putting them all together, we had public input meetings in our park. We had public input meetings in a coffee shop. We had public input meetings, frankly, just on the street during events that we would have, so that people felt comfortable giving input. But it also allowed us to get input from those that lived outside of town, that were investors or those that spent money in our town. And so mm-hmm. it was really good to think about our 15-minute drive time is really who we were trying to touch. And inside of our 15-minute drive time is 60,000 people. And only having 1,000 that live inside of city limits, we wanted to make sure that we were able to attract some of that outside money in to spend so that we could have some really nice things and cool experiences for our public or for our residents without having to pay for it.
I have heard it said recently that a public meeting in the city park will basically always be a friendlier meeting than a meeting at City Hall.
Absolutely. And people are people respond in different ways when they're in the park, because they're there to have fun, to allow their children to play, or because we're giving out free ice cream. And then, yeah, just as you said, it's very positive. Thank you for the ice cream. Oh, let me tell you, I'd really love to have a coffee shop right here. Or, gosh, have you thought about how maybe we could have an antique shop in town? But then also, you know, through the public process, you know, people started talking about it. And so you would go into, or I would go into a restaurant or the local tap room, and somebody would say, hey, I didn't get to say this while I was there, but could you add X, X, and X? And I'd be like, absolutely. So I'd take notes, go back, write it down, and say, hey, you know, Stephen told me this. Let's make sure we incorporate it. It was a great idea. And so it just kind of carried the conversation all on. And it, yes, it was all positive.
Mm-hmm. For cities and towns listening who either have done a master plan like this at some point or could be doing so in the future, there is, of course, a not inconsequential cost to creating these plans. So a big question is funding. So could you tell us some about funding for this plan?
Absolutely. So our first plan that we did was actually funded by the Municipal Association. It was step one in our five-year rural renewal master plan, and it was funded by the Hometown Economic Development Grant, which was $25,000 for us to start the process. We matched that so that we could obviously have additional studies completed. But then we also used in-kind services. And so we reached out to our county planning department to allow them to jump in with us and kind of do some of the initial research that perhaps we couldn't do, or perhaps we couldn't afford to have someone else do, such as, you know, just GIS planning and kind of that demographic analysis. The second set of funds that we used when we started looking at some of the public spaces was we used hospitality tax. And so we pulled about $15,000 out of our hospitality tax to look at public improvements that would encourage additional hospitality places. So, you know, additional restaurants, or how do we encourage overnight stays in some of our local Airbnbs? So we studied that aspect of it. And then the third pot of funding that we used that all municipalities were blessed with was ARPA funding. And so we pulled $25,000 out of ARPA funding specific for master planning, and we used it to look at our capital projects and our capital improvements over the next 10 years with a goal of replenishing our ARPA funds every 5 years. And so we wanted to make sure that our investments could be specifically tied to a return on investment that would reimburse 100% of ARPA every 5 years. And the reason that I wanted to do that was that so that the next set of elected administration could always look forward to having ARPA funds to use. And so our investment, you know, we can now look back at our plan and say, okay, well, our ARPA investment is going to replenish itself, and here's how it's going to do it. We've encouraged new residential growth that was cluster development, that was higher density, that was a higher price point. And so that tax money, we automatically, our increase, we automatically put back into the ARPA account. Same for hospitality tax, same for A-tax. It all goes into a separate account once we meet our threshold of budget. So it's unallocated funds that the next administration in 5 years, it'll be replenished, and they'll get to do this process all over again, which was the number one intent. So those are the three funding sources that we used. But there are other funding sources as well, such as for the upstate, you can use the Appalachian Regional Commission for planning, which is a 50-50 grant, or you can even use some CDBG funds to plan for low to moderate income areas.
Yeah, you mentioned the possibility of, you know, 5 years down the road, figuring out what to do at that time, which makes me think, could you talk a little about the timeline for this plan?
Absolutely. We started the process in 2016, kind of evaluating our first set of plans. And so the timeline for the planning process for us was over a 5 year period with three different sets of consultants, with three different sets of requests for proposals and qualifications. But our last process that pulled it kind of all together was very intense and was done over 6 months. And so it was a kickoff meeting. It was an evaluation of the previous plans, setting public input, and then immediately folding into, hey, we've received our ARPA funds and we don't want to spend any of them until we can show the public that we're going to reinvest this money and create a recurring revenue. So our total planning process was 5 years, but the last piece of it was only 6 months.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you mentioned, you know, not having businesses there in the past, and I'd like to talk about what's happened so far with plan recommendations, what's coming next. And I will tell you, as we're talking, I've got the Google Street View pulled up for Main Street. And if you like compare right now in 2023 to like a decade ago, gosh, it is so it is so much more colorful now.
Yes, it is. Oh man, I love looking back at the photos just from my two terms. But yeah, when we started the process, we had residents that would send us photos from the 60s and 50s and 60s, and it was very vibrant. And it, you saw people walking. And then, yeah, we got those photos from the 70s and 80s and 90s and early 2000s, and there's nothing. And yeah, it just blows my mind. But yeah, so you want me to talk a little bit about some of the implementation pieces that we've started and kind of where we're at. So the first master plan was a market study to kind of figure out how we could fill in our vacant buildings. Again, 100% vacancy to 100% occupancy. So we were leaking out, obviously, retail and restaurant, and we knew that we had locals that wanted to invest, that had ideas and opportunities, or wanted to open up kind of their second location. And that first master plan said, well, government, you need to take the first step. And so the first step in filling up Main Street was we moved City Hall from a 25 by 25 concrete block building to a 4,000 square foot storefront on Main Street. We took $1 million project and we whittled it down and had volunteers, and I myself painted every wall and hung every door, helped run electrical. So we got the project done for our budget, and then we started the marketing process to bring in those first set of businesses. And so we were very strategic of saying, okay, we know the progression is restaurant, retail, residential, so let's find our first restaurant. So, you know, our restaurants now are a Meat and Three, which is a third location for that business. We have a Hibachi Japanese place, and we have a coffee and sandwich shop. And those were our first investments to get people spending money in West Pelzer. We were leaking about $4 million a year in restaurant sales, where people within that 15-minute drive time were just frankly going somewhere else to eat. And so we created opportunities for them to stay here. We knew our second set would be our retail establishment. So we targeted an antique and vintage heirloom store. We targeted a women's clothing boutique and salon. And we also targeted a gentleman's barber shop. So a place to get a gentleman's shave, a gentleman's haircut. And that was to kind of keep people here just a little bit longer. So if we can get them to eat here, then can we get them to shop here just for 10 minutes and maybe squeeze an extra dollar out of that, tourist or visitor driving through? Our next progression after that was, well, how do we make people stay here on a Thursday, a Friday, or a Saturday night because they want to leave. We have our local theater in neighboring Pelzer, which is attracting 30,000 people a year from seven states. And we're like, all right, well, how do we capture them after a show? And so we convinced a local business owner to open up the Lincoln Tap Room. And so now we have a place that after a show or before a show, you can grab an adult beverage or you can grab water or Coke. There's a food truck and music every week at the local tap room. It's kid friendly. It has an outdoor beer garden. And so we figured out kind of how to capture people just a little bit longer. And then the next component of that was the residential. And so now that we've got people here eating and spending money in the retail shops and they're hanging out and drinking a beer and going to a show, then they go, well, dang, I'd just live here if I could. So we started targeting residential builders who would do infill development. It just happened to happen at the time when the economy was booming and residential growth was exploding. And so we were able to target those builders. And over the past 18 months, we've had about 600 building permits pulled in little old West Pelzer without annexing. So that means we had a lot of undeveloped property within our city limits that we could fill up where we didn't have to expand infrastructure. So so that was kind of the first aspect of the planning process and how we implemented. Now we're transitioning to how do we add value to those spaces? So we've got an 80-foot mural in town. We've created a festival street with string lights and movable furniture where we close off Hyman Street during certain times of the year and during festivals for folks just to eat and drink outside. And then the long-term aspects of it that the plans identified was how do we protect our boundaries? Yes, every community wants to grow, but not every community wants to explode with suburban growth. And we're one of those that want to control our growth. And so one of the things that my constituents and the public told us was that to protect our boundaries. And so we're blanketed on our west side by about 500 acres of agricultural property. And we're in the process now of identifying those property owners that wish to do two things. One, conserve their property through conservation easements with, you know, nonprofit groups such as Upstate Forever so that it will forever be agricultural. And then we're also working with the Conservation Bank to determine which property owners would be willing to sell for fair market value so that the town through the state can purchase that property and it be agricultural and available for public use forever. The other thing that we're doing on our north side, we're blanketed by the Saluda River. And so we entered into a long-term lease agreement with 10 acres along the Saluda River so that we could develop what we're calling Riverfront West, which will be a riverfront park, which will have boardwalks, picnic tables, and shelters along the river. And it'll also be a part of Anderson County's Saluda River Blue Trail. So we'll have a kayak access point where you're floating down the Saluda River. You can take out, enjoy your lunch, walk through the park, jump back in the river, and float down to the next takeout point. So we've implemented a lot, but we know that there's a lot to do next. You know, gateway signage, on-street parking, additional streetscapes. Those are all things that are part of our plan that we're planning for and seeking funding and trying to figure out how to take those next steps.
Streetscaping, you know, not every town has a landscape architect mayor.
That is very true. That is very true. I have to remind myself and continually tell staff and consultants that we hire that I'm not being paid to be the mayor. So we're paying you to do this. I'll just add value as I need to.
You know, one thing that jumps out at me, you know, you mentioned the new town hall and the antique store and the hibachi place in terms of like the tangibility of change and all of this coming together. These three things neighbor one another.
Yes. It is very different. Let's say that. And in talking to, you know, the folks that visit those places, but then also just some of our long-term residents or some of the senior population, they remember when the baby sumo or the hibachi place was the pharmacy. And, you know, they still go in there and, you know, the wall still exists with the different concrete patterns on it. And they're like, oh, that's, you know, that's where so-and-so the pharmacist was at. And that's where he would fill my prescriptions when I was 6 years old. Same thing. They go into the antique store, which used to be a furniture store, which was actually owned by Dolly Cooper, who was actually in the House of Representatives. And, great, great man, great individual. His son is also a great individual who served as chairman of Ways and Means. And so, yeah, people go in there and say, I remember talking to Dolly when he was in here. So, yeah, it's super fun. And then our city hall actually used to be a parts store. And so, yeah, when we were redoing that building, we were having to buff oil out of the floor where they.
I was about to say there had to be stains on that concrete.
Yes. Yes. Yes, there were. Interestingly enough, we finished City Hall in September of 17. We cut the ribbon on it on a Thursday, and on Tuesday, Irma flooded it. And we had to reconstruct everything from, you know, 2 feet down, all the walls, all the electrical. We had to redo everything again.
Oh, gosh. You also mentioned 100% business occupancy, and I think I want to say on the initial nomination, award nomination in this case, I believe it was 95% occupancy at that time. So that 5% difference must mean that somewhere the last space got closed out.
Yes. So I think when I wrote that, we had not officially cut the ribbon on our four corners. And so we had, it was really cool to do. And I love celebrating. That is one thing that as a mayor, I think we should do is celebrate successes and cut ribbons every chance we get. But one thing we did, we closed down Highway 8 on a Saturday at noon and cut the ribbon for the four businesses on the corner, which were 24 West Salon and Boutique, Baby Sumo, Cotton Duck Coffee and Cafe, and A1, which was the gentleman's barber shop. So we cut four ribbons at once, and we ticked off everyone that was traveling from the low country up to Clemson on that Saturday and backed up traffic. But it's an amazing experience when you close it off and you have ribbons stretched around all four corners of the intersection, and you have about 200 people there to celebrate filling up the rest of your Frankville business district. It's a humbling experience and will bring you to tears to see all those people clapping. And then the business is full because everyone's excited that you've went from, you know, zero to hero, if you will, in a short span.
I don't think I knew about the mural on the side of Town Hall. I've got it pulled up right now. It's a trail. It's got a campsite, even with a hammock. I love a camp hammock. Can you talk about that mural?
Absolutely. And so pre-COVID, again, we were looking for ways to encourage people to come to City Hall that didn't have to bring their wallet. And so we have or had a local artist who was part of the Greenville art scene, who had taught at Savannah School of Art and Design, had taught in Hong Kong, led the art department at the University of Miami, lived in West Pelzer. And we started to have a conversation about using City Hall as an art gallery. And so he started to reach out to Furman, to Anderson University, to Clemson University, about having monthly gallery exhibits in City Hall. And so every other month at our council meeting, we would have a new artist that we would introduce and recognize. And then after the council meeting, they would have their gallery open. And so we would have wine, heavy hors d'oeuvres for people to eat and drink and talk to the artist about what the art was, whether it was a painting or sculpture or a graphite drawing. And through that process, we met a local artist from Anderson University named Grace Gilbert. And Grace was a phenomenal painter, a bubbly personality. Everyone was just extremely attracted to just hanging out with her and getting to hear more about her story. My parents bought one of her gallery exhibits. Our town administrator had purchased one. And so we sat down with Grace and said, Grace, we've got a wall that is 15 foot tall and 80 foot long. And we received funding from a local arts group to paint a mural on this wall. We don't have an arts commission, so we're not taking anything before council. We'll pay you, just start painting. And so we gave her a month and a few thousand dollars. And her and her friends painted our first mural in West Pelzer, which was really the kickoff to people getting excited about the gallery. And so the gallery, which we have kept exhibits in but have not brought artists back post-COVID, is called the Grand Gallery. And it's called the Grand Gallery because we are strategically located between Greenville, GR, and Anderson, AND. And so it's a little bit of a play on the name that is the Grand Gallery. And it's been great. We still have folks that stop by City Hall and say, hey, will you buzz me through? I want to go check out the gallery. So it's awesome. People come to City Hall and don't have to bring their wallets. It's a success.
It's a much more fun City Hall.
It is.
So I believe that takes us to the question that I have for every Achievement Award winner ever, which is, what can other cities and towns learn from what West Pelzer did with this master plan and everything that's come out of it?
Yeah. The number one thing that other cities can learn is that it's not about you. It's not about the mayor's vision. It's not about the town administrator's vision. It's about you. It's about your constituents and the people that make the place. We can design great streets. We can have great places, but without the people, those places are absolutely meaningless. And so the number one thing that everyone can learn is to engage the residents and ask them exactly what they want. They'll have negative ideas and they'll say, we wish this or we want that. But it's talking about how do you transform the place. That's the number one thing. The second thing is you can't do everything yourself, and that it takes a village to transform individual communities or individual aspects of communities. And so don't be afraid to ask for help, to ask for steering committees, to ask for volunteers to be a part of that process. Our steering committee in West Pelzer was literally made up of children from the elementary school to individuals that had lived in West Pelzer their entire life and were 80 plus years old. And so make sure that your group is diverse. The third thing or the final thing that other cities can learn is that everything takes time, but you have to invest yourself. You cannot wait for the state or your legislative delegation or a grant to kind of piecemeal things together. You have to step up to the plate first. In West Pelzer, had we not invested $500,000 of our own money and put our own skin in the game to move City Hall, we could never have convinced any of the other things to happen. For West Pelzer, since 2016, we've had about $40 million of private investment happen inside of our city limits with, you know, reconstruction of buildings or new construction of homes or, you know, sewer rehab. That was all done by private folks because, you know, we want residences to happen or we wanted that growth to happen in this infill lot. And it all started with our $500,000 of initial investment to show that we cared and that we were making a difference. Mm-hmm. So people matter, be diverse, invest yourself.
Absolutely. I'm curious, with drawing input from school children, what did you find that school children bring to the table that you don't get with other groups?
So they interestingly enough, they bring the fun to it. And so I do this one project every year with West Pelzer Elementary School where I bring in a chalkboard and I teach children that you don't talk with your mouse, you talk with your hands. And so I give them a piece of chalk and I say, I want you to draw on this chalkboard what you want to see in West Pelzer. And so every year I get, we want a Chick-fil-A or we want a water park or a roller coaster. but then you have those children that, you know, their parents are talking to them and they write things like, we want the pothole fixed on Main Street or we want soft mulch in our playground. And so they give some of the creative and they give some of the real ideas of we had a student one time write on the board that they wanted the trash picked up more often in their playground. which we thought the public maintenance guys were doing that. But when children start to recognize, hey, there's not enough trash cans in the park, and that's something easy that we can fix. We also didn't recognize that we didn't have swings in our park until a child told us, I'd love to swing and your park's awesome, but it doesn't have any. So we purchased swings. The other thing that they do is they get creative and have a little fun. During COVID, I dressed up like Bigfoot and Abraham Lincoln. I have a long beard and a handlebar mustache. And I delivered food from our local restaurants when the governor had shut down the restaurants for indoor dining. And so the kids were like, oh, when you paint the mural, make sure there's a Bigfoot on there somewhere. And so if you can zoom in really close on the right side, and there's a little Bigfoot that's stuck in the corner. We actually ask our elementary school if they would help us design our town flag. And, I go and I tell the story of how West Pelzer started, and I ask them all to, I give them all 11 by 17 sheet of paper and tell them to design a flag. All of them put somebody with a beard and a handlebar mustache and a dog on their flag. So they get creative, they have fun, and I think they keep the senior citizens youthful and lively. And that not everything is small town politics, and you've got to beat somebody down to get something through. You can have fun. It's okay to smile a little bit as mayor.
That is awesome. And I imagine this is the flag in front of town hall. It's got some orange to it. It looks like
it does. So I made all of our council members watch the TED talk about city flags before we finalized our flag design. If you were to look at our flag or go to Street View and see it, you'll see that the bottom is a blue color that represents the river and how the area was founded along the river. You'll see that there's a line down the middle. It's kind of a white stripe that represents Highway 8 as the corridor that connects Fountain Inn and 385 to 85. That's our main street. The orange above, yes, it represents the greatest place on earth, Clemson University, and all of those folks from the low country
that travel
to Death Valley seven times a year. But it also represents the sun setting in the west. And then in that orange, there are three birds. Our first ordinance that was created way back when was to create West Pelzer as a bird sanctuary. It is still illegal to kill a bird or move a nest in West Pelzer. But those three birds are representative of gambling, dogs, and alcohol, which is why we were founded.
So it got a little more abstract there. I love that.
Yeah. There's always the Easter egg somewhere. Mm-hmm. So that's our Easter egg. When I talk to the elementary school children, I tell them that those three birds represent the past, the present, and the future. But everyone knows it really represents gambling, dogs, and alcohol.
Well, as we wrap up, any final thoughts on all of this? This has been a great discussion.
No, I will just kind of end with, I announced last month that I would not be seeking re-election for a third term in West Pelzer. And everyone was kind of, why are you doing that? We're doing such great things and you've got such a great vision. But the important thing behind our master plan was that it wasn't Blake Sanders' vision. It was the community's vision. And so I'm excited for the next group of leaders to pick up this plan, to implement those next steps and move it forward. And I get to be the biggest cheerleader, knowing that I helped start the vision, but it wasn't about me. And I'm kind of halfway proving a point with that, because I'm super excited for those that have signed up to put themselves in public office and run for mayor or run for those council seats. And they're equally as excited about implementing the next phase of the plans. And so it goes back to, it's not about me. It never was about me. It's about the community. And there's great things in store for West Pelzer, and there's some amazing things in store for the other 270 municipalities across the state. And we look forward to helping share our story and vision so that other folks can learn from it too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there is an award video for anyone who wants to see all of this in action that we showed it at the annual meeting, but it's available. Anyone can call it up. You can learn more about all the achievement awards. You can brainstorm for submissions for 2024 awards. Go through the winners from this year at the Municipal Association, www.masc.sc, and search for achievement awards. And with that, Mayor, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today and tell us about so much of what is happening in West Pelzer.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. Look forward to doing it again soon.
The City Quick Connect podcast is one of several ways the Municipal Association keeps you informed of the opportunities and issues impacting South Carolina cities and towns. Learn more at www.masc.sc and stay up to date with the Association's latest happenings on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.